Wednesday, August 14th, 2019. This is The Better Life. I am your host, Timothy Lawson, along with my better half, Eric Rosenthal. Sir, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm well. Going into that intro, I always think, what's a way that I can make it sound a little bit different this time? And then I'm like, why would I want to? It sounds perfect every time, if you ask me. And if you're not familiar with our guests, if you didn't pick up on the clues that we were laying down last week, we have with us, I will go ahead and say the better half of another Vegas gambling. I don't want to call you a Vegas podcast. That's not, you guys are a gambling podcast.
We're a gambling podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so easy to start labeling things Vegas podcast because everybody else does that. And like, I feel bad that I just did that. Cause I always think every time someone calls us a Vegas podcast, I want to snap, be like, no. Right, gambling podcast, but I'm really delaying the lead, burying the lead here. Mark the fall from You Can Bet on That.
Yeah, and you know, I was listening to your last episode, and you were giving the clues as to who the guest was going to be, and I thought, am I the guest? Because I hadn't heard, hadn't told me yet. I think I'm the guest next week.
Yeah, well, you had a. I figured I was safe in teasing it since we had attempted a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, you were under the weather a little bit, couldn't make it. So I figured if I teased it, you wouldn't be surprised or too surprised. Yeah. Anyway. So
that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you couldn't make it, be like, well, got everybody. I tried. Mark didn't want to be here. I tried. Eric, we'll start with you on the gambling recap. I know you said it's been a busy week, but we're gamblers, we're bettors. I know you had action somewhere. What did the past week look like for you betting wise?
I had some preseason football action. Did not go well. Yeah, that was not a strong week for me. Down 6 units.
Oh wow. Are you the preseason better that like when it goes right, you're like, see, I knew Brent in the preseason was fine. But when it goes wrong, you're like, what am I doing? Why am I betting this?
No. Okay. I know why I'm betting it. Some coaches have a belief that preseason matters, and I like to back them, and coaches that believe that preseason is just how they figure out how to fill out their roster, I fade them. And more often than not, it works in my favor. Last week it did not.
Yeah. So pretty much the same for me, just some sports. I bet a few preseason NFL games, a couple totals that went my way, and then I took the Browns only because I don't know. I don't think that this will be the case through the full preseason. But if there was ever a team who was just ready to prove themselves, even with all the hype, even with the overrated, there's no value in them on the futures market or the season win total market. There's no value anywhere for them. But I think I got them at minus half a point or minus 1 point against the Redskins, and I think there was no. Every player on that roster wanted to prove that the Browns were capable of winning. And so I took them there. I don't know if I would necessarily look to do that again in the next few weeks of preseason, but I thought coming out the gate, there was some value and it ended up working out for me. Mark, how was the past week? I know you were at the casino at least once.
Yeah.
Assuming you guys made your regular trip. And then I know you did some baseball. How does the past week look for you?
Not that great. The casino did not go particularly well. We had a little bit of a comeback late in the evening, but overall, no, big loser. And then I've been making the baseball bets for the both of us. And no, it was not a good week. Yesterday was particularly bad, down 4 units, probably down like 16 units for the week. Just miserable. One bright spot, Mike, on Saturday, apparently he'd been watching Hard Knocks. You know, it's that HBO series. This year they're following the Raiders. And he saw something on that he liked. So he said, all right, take the Raiders Saturday night. So we took them -4.5. And I think the final score was like 14-3. So that was one bright spot. But no, hasn't been a particularly good week.
The Hard Knocks was just a year too early on the Browns, right? How great would have been coverage on them this year?
Did you make any future bets on the Browns?
I made, so I've taken them to make the playoffs.
Okay. It just, I was, it seems like a lot of action is coming in on them, and then maybe it might be the line might be a little lower than it should be. But what'd you get it at, Dean?
I got them to make the playoffs at -125. Definitely a square number, right? You could have gotten a better number earlier.
Yeah.
When it first came out. But what I like about it is their season win total is right around 9.5, and I think that's probably the right number for it, right? I could see them winning 9 if they're really as good as people think they might be. They could win 10, but they also could go 8-8 and in the AFC still compete for a wild card, right? So I thought that them to make the playoffs, I like that. I don't like them anywhere else in the futures market, season win total, stuff like that. I don't really know which way. I don't want to buy into all the hype, but I'm not sure if I'm really to fade it yet either. What I'm kind of hoping is so the Steelers are like pretty good at football, even with the losses they've taken. Like, they're pretty good at football, right? They just know how to compete. And I think that if the Bengals are kind of a dud, I think the Ravens, it'll be interesting to see. I always forget what their quarterback's name is. It'll be interesting to see how defenses adjust to him. I think he's one dimensional, and I think once people sort of square that in, I don't think he can throw his way into a playoff run. I think that if the Browns come out hot and the Steelers maybe drop a few early, I think the Steelers may have some value on winning the division. After the first like 4 or 5 weeks, you might see some value there.
That's the value now. That's my play. I took Pittsburgh to win the division. I think it's a coin flip between Pittsburgh and Cleveland, and there were much better odds on Pittsburgh.
What is that? The North, AFC North. Mm-hmm. I see +125 on both sides. Would you say you got it at?
I don't have it. I didn't know we were doing this. I don't have that in front of me.
When we record, uh-huh, you just need to be prepared with everything.
Do you know how many apps I would have to have up and running?
I want all of your casino hosts waiting for a possible dial-in. I want everything ready.
All right. So I don't have the number, but the short answer is there were better odds on Pittsburgh, and I view Pittsburgh and Cleveland as a coin flip. So I didn't necessarily fade Cleveland, but I kind of faded Cleveland.
Yeah. So here's a really interesting bet. And this is the first year I've seen this. I didn't know this was a bet. Team to finish second. Browns are at +185. That's interesting. If you believe that the Steelers or Ravens could ultimately be better than the Browns at the end of the season, but do believe the Browns will be competitive, it's an interesting wager there. Do you have any futures or anything like that going into the NFL season, Mark?
No, we haven't bet any. I'm going to leave that up to Mike. He hasn't really said anything at this point. Maybe we'll do some over-unders on wins, but no, we don't have anything right now.
You notice how like Eric just can't say, no, I don't have that. He always has to throw in, if I would have known we were talking about that. Always got to throw it on me. Got
to
make sure.
As soon as he said that, I pulled up one of my spreadsheets here. So just in case I had to reference it.
Good. I might have mentioned this last week, but Detroit Lions -6.5 is a bet that I have. I took Auburn. This is going into college football. Auburn -7.5 wins at +115. I know a lot of people got that at 8 with some juice on the under. I took it at 7.5 with some plus money on the under. I took over 8.5 on Missouri at even money. And then I took the Browns to make the playoffs. So that is so far all I've made. I'm sure I will get a bug in me in the last week to make a couple more of these when I realize that it'll be like my last chance to make some. But you know, like we see in so many markets, oftentimes you're going to find a lot more value after the first like quarter or third of the season has gone by, when there's knee-jerk responses to how teams are performing. So made a couple. I liked that. I liked those because the season win totals are not ones that you can really get throughout the season. But when it comes to Super Bowls, MVP, stuff like that, those are ones that'll pop back up. So Eric, we will no, let's actually go with what we led off with or what we finished with last time. We had an email from a listener. They ended it with talking about how their wife only lets them gamble once a month and how we do it. I know this is a conversation that Eric, you and I have briefly, like we've mentioned a few times here on the show. Mark, I know you and Dr. Mike have praised your wives on your show as it comes to being allowed to run off once a week to go to the casino and hang out. And it seems this question continues to arise, though. How do us routine gamblers manage to enjoy that life while both maintaining the trust and maintaining a healthy relationship with our wives? I will begin. My wife might actually be able to hear me. I'm not quite sure if she can or not. Depends if she's she's downstairs. We'll see. I'll learn later if she heard me or not. But you know, it takes, look, I messed up once prior. I've told people that I don't, as most people know, I don't wager offshore anymore. And that's a hard rule for me now because I got, you know, she asked me to stop and I didn't. And she learned later. I think she saw like my screen open, rookie, you know, like I made the mistake of, I wasn't keeping close tabs on what was on my mobile screen, and she saw it, and that was an unfortunate situation for us. And it took some, it took a lot of talking and a lot of rebuilding some trust to get back there. And you know, when we talk about it's kind of twofold, right? I mean, one, there's the money aspect, right? For anybody who's married to someone who doesn't gamble, that's always a concern, right? Well, I mean, and I don't know about either of you. I don't talk the numbers with my wife, right? I don't tell her like how much I may be up or down, but I will like tell her, like, you know, she's like, how'd you do? I was like, oh, I lost today. Or how'd you do? I won today. Sometimes I'll mention an amount, like if I won a significant amount, I may let her know, but never tell her when I lose a significant amount, you know what I'm saying? So, but I try to be transparent in that way. I don't play the, oh, I broke even game every week or every time I go out, right? I come back and I'm honest with her. And I make sure that when I am running off to the casino, I personally ensure that I am being mindful of the time I'm spending with my wife otherwise, right? So if I head out to the casino for a Saturday morning, or whatever it may be, I always make sure that sometime during that weekend or the following weekend that there is like, you know, that I make sure that I, spend some time with my wife, or at least help her, encourage her to do things that I know that she enjoys, whether it's hang out with friends or whatever it may be, sort of making sure she knows that she has the same agency over her time as she's allowing me to have in choosing to go to the casino. Yeah, I think I'll hand over the microphone over to you. What's a time or a moment that maybe there was a concern between you and your wife, and how did you deal with it? And maybe after you're done telling it, maybe sort of talk, sort of give us sort of an overall spectrum of sort of, you know, how you and your wife sort of maintain that conversation, both in the past and currently.
Yeah. So before we got married, when we were dating, she knew that I was a gambler, and that was definitely a concern for her going into the marriage. Like a lot of families, her family had some history of addiction. And so she was mm-hmm. concerned, and I think rightfully so. And in fact, when I came into the marriage, I did have some gambling debt. So I brought that into the marriage. I think that getting married, just in general, made me feel like I needed to be more responsible in a lot of ways. And gambling and money was certainly, you know, one of those things I needed to be more responsible about. And of course, having kids too, that brings in more responsibility. But fairly early on in the marriage, we agreed that she would be handling the finances. Family finances, the household finances, and that any gambling that I did would have to be like a separate account. I did have a certain bankroll to start with, thanks to poker play, We had a and still have a weekly poker game, and I do pretty well at that, and so I'm able to kind of maintain a bankroll that way. But I think she's still concerned. I mean, she's always going to be concerned. But I think a couple of things have helped. Number one, she saw quite a change in my personality when Dr. Mike and I started the podcast. I know not everybody can, you know, start a gambling podcast, but she saw how important it was to me and how much I got out of it. That, you know, I really just, my overall demeanor improved on that. And so she saw how important that was to me. Now, again, since then, I mean, I've really got a hand to it. Both of us, Dr. Mike and I, are very lucky because here we're doing this show once every 2 weeks. We go to the casino literally every week. It's usually a Friday, and we stay out till all hours. You know, we're getting in at 4 a.m., things like that. And the weekly poker game, and she's just a saint in that she's letting me do that, you know, week after week. And I think Dr. Mike is in the same boat. But for me, and this works for me big time, she handles all the finances, literally. She's, you know, the paychecks come in, she's handling all the bills, and my stash, luckily, has remained in the positive for the past few years. If I'm a smart gambler, I'll know that maybe that won't happen, you know, maybe that won't last, and I should prepare myself for what I'm going to do in that case. But for right now, I'm okay.
Okay.
Washing machines be damned.
Exactly. You know, certain things are important, right? When I get in bed, I want to watch a big old TV screen. I don't care if my clothes are clean.
Priorities. Tim, are you familiar with the reference?
I am. Yes. Okay. And if,
right. Okay. Well, for people who may not be familiar, I'll just tell it real quick. So for a long time, our washing machine was out and we just put off buying it, you know, financial reasons or just, and so it was my wife. She was continually going to the laundromat to do the laundry. And then one night after a particularly big win, I thought, you know what? We really need a better TV for the bedroom. We just had an old tube in there. And so I just went out to Costco and bought this nice TV and put it up. And a few days later, we were talking with Dr. Mike and his wife, and Sherry just happened to mention that, yeah, we still don't have a new washer, but we did get a nice TV for the bedroom. And then, you know, all Lynn, Mike's wife, was just appalled, right, that it would happen. I didn't think too much of it. I think Sherry was, you know, didn't think all that much of it. But in retrospect, it was probably a pretty dick move on my part to buy the TV before the washing machine.
Well, it has kept me out of the doghouse on many of occasion because I can always fall back to, I mean, you have a washing machine.
That's right. I'm not Mark, for God's sake.
I don't know if either of you, I don't know if either of you do this. It's a joke now between me and my wife, but I will, when I come back from the casino, I will then like give my wife like 10 or 20 bucks and call it my tithe, for going to like, all right, like, yeah, I'm back, baby. Here you go. Here's your, I don't want to call it a cut because I'm not always winning. Right. But I always like suffer. It's usually the indication of if I won, it's usually about 20 bucks. If I lost, it's usually more like 10. Yeah.
Now I use something similar. You were talking about how you don't tell your wife specific numbers, and I generally don't either, you know, unless it's like, oh yeah, you know, I only lost 50 bucks. It was not, but I generally will stay away from figures, and she doesn't really want to know usually anyway. But every time I come home from the casino, they've got a Starbucks there. I bring her home a Starbucks. I just put it in the refrigerator. She heats it up the next day. So it's sort of a trivial little thing, but she looks forward to it. So that's
good. Eric, your turn.
I don't want to say it wasn't negotiable on the way in, but it was, it was an understood and a given, all the way down to how many trips to Vegas a year would be acceptable.
So the only thing I grandfathered, like hard grandfathered into my marriage, was my motorcycle. This is who I am, and like until I get into like an accident where we can like actually discuss the safety or the, you know, the practicality of me having a motorcycle, this is me, and then this motorcycle stays. I think
I love love that it's until you get into an accident.
Well, if you're brain damaged, you're not going to be able to put up much of a fight in that argument.
Well, yeah, I mean, fair point, but the idea is I'm willing to hear her concerns at that point, right? Like I understand, I know there's a risk of me being on the motorcycle. I know that you know, I know it makes people uneasy, but up until that, and look, an accident doesn't have to be being like hit by a bus, right? It could just be like the motorcycle going down, whatever it may be. You know, we can actually have a discussion then. In other words, there's no discussion until until the worst happens. Like that's how grandfathered this thing. When it came to gambling, I didn't make it so like to what you're alluding to, Erica, that's like, hey, this is non-negotiable. But I think my wife knew that's who I was, right? She knew this is a part of who I am. And in a few of the harder conversations that we've had to have about it, I think something that I started discussing with her that I hadn't really brought up to her originally, which I think is really key, is I talked to her about the things that I enjoyed about gambling that weren't gambling, right? That wasn't the gambling itself, right? Like how sports betting is a cerebral exercise for me, right? Like, you know, like market value and handicapping and like how it's in the form of gambling, but like these are the parts of it that I really enjoy. The prize is winning money, but the activity is these other things that go into it. And how going to the casino, like craps, like when I play craps or even like when I'm at a table, it's so like I'm not tempted to look on my phone. I enjoy the community aspect of it. When I'm on the don't, like it's a great exercise in stoicism. Like there's like in some of these harder conversations, I've really like talked to her about some of the things I really enjoy about gambling and whether or not that doesn't make her more comfortable with the risk, right? She's not more risk averse now all of a sudden because I'm not on my phone as much when I'm playing Pai Gal, but you know, I think it helped her understand or at least trust that the gambling is the vehicle, is the avenue, it's the activity in which I am enjoying or getting some of these benefits. I just also happen to like the activity that's going on in front of me. And it's not that I'm chasing a rush or that I need some, you know, I need the action or whatever. Don't tell her about the Little League games that I have action on, but or the Tiddlywinks game down the street. There's a couple teenagers in my neighborhood are playing Call of Duty right now. I got action on the kid from down the street, but you know, I think that again, it's not that she all of a sudden, you know, was comfortable with gambling or thought that it was like, oh, this is fine, but at the very least she saw a deeper aspect of gambling that I think non-gamblers don't see or understand. I think a lot of non-gamblers at face value see just that about gambling. The face value of it is risky money and that it's somehow like chasing that action when there's so many other benefits and so many other components, especially the social aspect with the community and stuff like that. Have you ever had conversations like that with your wife? I'm sure she understands the community aspect of it because you host a freaking podcast that everybody loves, for God's sakes. But are there other aspects you've got a chance to, do you communicate with her about why you enjoy this stuff?
You know, maybe early on in the marriage, I think we've settled in where now where she kind of understands where I'm coming from. Like I said, I think it's always going to be a concern for her, but it's not like it's a strain on our marriage. It's just something that she's always going to be mindful of.
Right.
So no, I don't think we've had any, I have had conversations like, oh yeah, I'm going to Atlantic City next week. Oh, you are? Well, that's too extreme. I didn't do it a week beforehand, but if I say, oh, we're going to Atlantic City in May. Oh, aren't you already going to Las Vegas in October? That's, you know, an extra trip I didn't know about. Right. So maybe those kind of conversations come up every once in a while.
Yeah. Have you told her about possibly going to Biloxi next April?
No, but that's probably okay because she knows now about Gambapalooza around April time. So
oh, okay.
I haven't mentioned that specifically, but she'd probably be okay with that.
Yeah, not that he listens to the show, but Vito, we are ready for the announcement. I don't know when you're ready to make it official, but we're all ready. We all know what's about to happen. Just say it.
Yeah, like we said, we're expecting either Biloxi or Monaco. So, you know, make up your mind.
Well, there is a small contingent of people that I think are holding on to hope that it might be Reno.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's Reno eventually.
Yes, Reno eventually. I think the pendulum is swinging a little too strongly on Biloxi. That I think that's where it's going to end up by the time it falls in place.
And I don't think I've ever mentioned it to Vito or even to you, Eric, but I think it would be nice if we never had it in Las Vegas, because there's so many trips to Las Vegas.
It'll never be in Las Vegas.
Yeah, sounds
never.
Good.
It'll never be in Las Vegas. Let me say it this way. As long as I remain involved, it'll never be in Las Vegas.
I'm pretty sure it'll be in Monaco before it's in Las Vegas. Eric, have you had any sort of profound conversations with your wife about sort of your, like, what you actually get out of gambling other than the action itself?
In some ways. So I guess the answer is there really aren't an awful lot of things that I enjoy. And one of the things that I struggled with quite a bit, especially in my 20s when gambling wasn't quite as prevalent, I went through the motions an awful lot. Anything that I did because somebody else wanted to do it. It wasn't what I enjoyed doing. Now, 20 years later, I still don't have a lot of things that I enjoy besides gambling, and that, you know, that may not be the best thing to admit, but it's the truth. And whether it be the mental gymnastics of figuring out where the action should be, or it's the experience, it's one of the few things that I genuinely enjoy. So that conversation has happened. And I think that also kind of takes off the pressure a little bit, because I'm not going out on, you know, I don't play golf, I don't hunt, I don't, I don't know. What do other middle-aged guys do that, you know, is like their thing?
Their muse?
Golf is the big thing. Yeah, I don't golf right. either.
I'm not going to massage parlors. I'm not going to, you know, you go down the list and you're like, all right, if that's like the biggest problem, as long as it's kept in check and there are no financial issues to go with it, then, you know, it really shouldn't be that big of a deal.
Yeah. I'm with you. All right. Well, I hope that not only answers the emailer's question, but I hope that maybe gets a half a step deeper than what we've gotten to in the past. So, gentlemen, thank you for contributing to that conversation. Eric, you wanted to talk about the etiquette of playing poker and leaving after a big win. Why don't you set the stage for this conversation?
Okay, so the question specifically really is the difference between in a casino and in a home game. I had played in a home game recently where a player took down a large pot, and it was the largest pot of the night. It was not towards the end of the night. It was really, you know, everybody figured there would still be at least a couple hours. Cash game, obviously. And the player who took down the large pot said, all right, I'm out, and cashed out and left. And nobody was particularly pleased with that. You may not be the I think poker etiquette is definitely your wheelhouse. How would you feel if in your poker home game, if I showed up, I took down a huge pot and I was like, all right, guys, thanks, I'm out?
Yeah, that has happened in our home game, and it is terrible, terrible etiquette. You don't do that. If you are going to be leaving the game early, you have to announce that before you've won a big pot. It is assumed if there's a set amount of time, hey, we're going to be playing till midnight. If that has been said, then that is you assume everybody's going to be there. But when somebody wins a big pot and says, oh, you know, glad to see, you know, nice to see everybody, I'm out of here. No, that is absolutely terrible. I would not invite that person back. And again, this has happened, and that's just wrong.
So what would have been, let's set the stage. So this guy took down a $500 pot plus. Based on the stakes that were being played, that was a large pot. If he knew he wanted to leave, once he took down that pot, what should have been the appropriate way of handling it? Obviously not leaving now. Would he say, I'm going to leave in an hour? Or is there X amount of money that, you know, he should be expected to put in play before he leaves?
Yeah, that's a good question. From his standpoint, what his responsibility is, well, hopefully, again, there's been a set time we're playing till this time, and he needs to play till that time. Once he's won that pot, I don't think he can say, all right, now I'm only going to stay for another hour. Really, when it comes to home games, if you're going to leave early, you need to announce it before you've won a big pot. Once you've won a big pot, you're playing till the end. Now, you know, he could just kind of fold, keep folding, and, you know, just not put any more money in. Well, there's not much really you can do about that. But when he actually walks away from the table, that's money that nobody at the table can get back. It's gone. And, you know, potentially right. Everyone else could be a loser. You know, he could be the only winner for the night. Once he leaves, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. No, from right. his standpoint, he's got to stay till the end of the game.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to protect your winnings and fold and just not put much action in, whatever, that's on you. But it, you know, don't just stand up and bounce, right? Like, actually still be a participant in the activity. And I was going to say, like, at the very least stick around for an hour, but you're right. Like, you know, you can almost lean on the play conservative and fold every hand even more if you know you're bouncing soon. So, I like where if you're going to leave before the end time, you have to announce that almost like upon arrival almost.
Yeah. And I'm one of those poker players who treat my entire poker career as one long session. So for me personally, if I won this huge pot, I'm going to continue to play the rest of the night the same that I always do. I'm not going to be ultra conservative. I'm going to play the exact same way I always do. And I'm going to stay till the agreed upon stopping time.
But the exception to that would be if they bust their bankroll at that point. I assume you're okay with them leaving?
Oh, absolutely. And I have no problem with that. Usually we'll say something like, hey, if you don't have any money, we can lend you some money. But if they say, no, I've lost too much tonight, it's like, okay, very good. Yeah, no problem there. We're not going to force somebody to stay into a game where they could potentially lose even more.
So now let's take it out of the living room and put it in a casino.
Yep, that's cool.
Same thing happens, yep. Right? You take down a large pot based upon the stakes. The guy wants to get up and leave.
That is completely different. If somebody were to do that, I would actually understand. You know, maybe he wants to have a winning session, especially since, unless it's like 4 a.m. in the morning, especially since somebody else is ready to come over to the table. Now, maybe he is taking quite a bit of money off the table, but the game is going to keep going. And again, this is not it's not the same as a social gathering in a home game. You know, home games, yeah, you're there to play poker, but you're there to also spend some time with your friends. And when you're in a casino, that's not necessarily the case. It's your goal is to get money out of other people. And one thing about a casino depends on table stakes too. In a casino, if you have a big win, well, now you have a lot of chips that are at risk. Whereas in a home game, you know, the rules might be different. Maybe you don't play table stakes. In other words, you know, maybe you're not playing no limit or something like that. But no, I think it is completely different in a casino situation. Now, I've seen people do it and I don't like it. They come and they play two hands, they win some huge pot and they leave and I don't like it, but I'm not going to say anything. It's poker.
Well, good. Thank you, Mark.
I mean, is there anything? There's nothing else you could do again because it's a public poker room. I mean, you could just decide if you ever see that guy in there again, you're not going to play with him. But you know,
well, do you right? So obviously, there's nothing you can actually do to stop him from leaving, but right. You could have a few words as he's stacking up the chips into his rack to leave.
Oh, sure. And I'm sure plenty of people would. I personally don't think I'd say anything because there have been cases. Well, it was relatively recently. I was up at the Garden Casino up in LA. And I was pressed for time. And I wasn't even sure if I was going to get into a game and have enough time to play. And this Big O game opened up. It's basically, people who are familiar, it's Omaha High-Low, except you get 5 cards instead of 4. A lot of action. Turned out to be an incredibly juicy game. I won some big pots. And then I had to leave. I was on a time schedule. I had to go meet my wife somewhere. So I did get up and I got some glares. Nobody said anything outright, but I definitely got some glares and I understand that. But, you know, again, yeah, casino's different.
You're not expected in a casino when you sit down and be like, all right, by the way, everybody, I only have an hour and a half. Just want everybody to know I'm only going to be here for an hour and a half, right?
Yeah, you don't need to announce that at a casino.
And then, like, I can't help it if in that 90 minutes, that minute 80 is when I get a juicy pot and I take it down. Right. Like that's just how that's just when it happened to come. Right. It could have came in minute 10 and I had almost the full time to expose my bankroll again. It just happened to came in minute 80. It's an interesting question. And if I wasn't under a time crunch, I feel like I would hang around just to not get those glares and like maybe for another half hour, you know, just maybe once around a table one more time. Maybe I go through like another set of blinds at least. You can't. I know it definitely looks a certain way, Eric. I'm sure this is sort of what your is for. Where like you take down a big pot and you get up and leave, like, well, okay, there goes that money. Especially if you're the one who lost that, right? If you're the one who lost, like, if you had the most stakes going into that pot, it's like, all right, well, I can't like avenge myself in sort of a way. But to your point, Mark, it is the casino, and almost at every hour of the day, there's someone else waiting to sit down at that table.
Yeah. And I will say this, I don't have very strong feelings when it comes to this situation in a casino, but I have very strong feelings about what happened in your game, Eric, and that was egregious. That's just absolutely unacceptable.
So, you know, you brought up a point that didn't even necessarily dawn on me in the moment. One of the issues with the ongoing home game is always having enough players on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Right. So up and leaving because you're winning. All right. That's bad. But the problem is you've now depleted the player pool.
Yeah.
So it's beyond just the money leaving this table economy. It's, you know, it's hard enough to get enough players. Now, because you're up, you decide to leave and, you know, which causes the game to break early.
Mark, would you at the beginning of a game, would you recommend that someone who's either starting a home game or maybe they're in one and haven't had to think about this problem, sort of giving people warning, like, look, you're expected to play till the end. If you leave early without an announcement at the beginning, you will not be invited to the next game.
Yeah, only if they're up. Obviously, like we said before, if they're down,
right,
then they can leave. But,
right.
Oh, yeah, I would recommend it to anybody starting a home game. It's like, all right, we're playing till midnight. If you need to leave early, let us know now so we're ready for it. And actually bring up a situation. You could just say, we had a situation once where somebody won a huge pot and then just left. They didn't say they were going to leave early. They just left. And that's bad etiquette.
So and we're getting into like the nitty gritty here, but I'm curious your thoughts still. If I said, all right, Mark, I have to actually be out of here at 10:30 and it's 10:10 and pot finishes, it's around 10:15. Are you still looking me at a way if I start packing up and getting ready to go? Or are you like, look, you said 10:30, we got 15 more minutes of your action.
Yeah, I know. You know, when it gets to something like that, if it seems like they're doing it on purpose, you know, it's like, oh, I just want a big pot, I'm going to get out of here.
Right.
Then, yeah, I'd still have an issue with it. Especially, I might have a little issue with it. You know, if it's 5 minutes before, if it's 10:25, well, no big deal. But, yeah.
You know, I've never seen Mark fired up. I kind of want to see Mark fired up.
I work really hard to not get fired up because I have this fear of getting fired up, being wrong because I misunderstood something and looking like a fool. So I kind of work on it.
As someone who's been in that situation plenty of times, let me tell you, it is not fun. It is not fun when you get so pissed off that you end up being a dick and then you realize that you were wrong. Oh my goodness. It is the worst. I'm curious, and I'm sure you've mentioned it a few times. I know that you've sort of alluded to it. I don't know if you've ever told a story, but can you recall on a time where you kind of lost your cool at a casino, like especially at a craps table?
No, I can't. Not a casino. I can think of some times from my life, but at a casino, not really getting angry. I've had disagreements with dealers and pit bosses and things like that, and maybe I've gotten angry, but I've never lost it at a casino, no.
Okay, because I know occasionally Dr. Mike will sort of like, oh, you were pretty upset, and I never know if he's like, if he's trying to get you to tell a story of like when you kind of lost it, or if that's all it was you were a little upset about something.
He may say that, but he gets upset at the casino way more than I do, way more.
Oh, I've seen Mike get upset. I've seen Mike get upset probably. And I mean, I think from an average listener relationship, we've probably played more often than most of your listeners, but certainly not like on the regular. I've seen Mike upset at least 4 or 5 times.
Yeah. I mean, it'll happen on a trip. You know, it'll be that last day. He'll be stuck for who knows how much. And it's kind of like, don't talk to Dr. Mike.
All right. Very good. Well, let's there's a couple more items we need to talk about. Ones that involve all of us. First of all, Vinny Chenz from the 7Out podcast started a NFL pool among podcasters. It includes Due for a Win, The Better Life, Vegas Confessions, 7Out podcast, You Can Bet on Nats, and Cousin Vito. Some of you may be wondering, huh, really? All of those? Yep, even those that aren't currently podcasting are included in the podcast pool. I want to know, let's take bets.
Who are you referring to?
Well, you'll find, hold on. Who wants to, will Cousin Vito put out a podcast before the first official NFL regular season game? I'm taking the no on a podcast episode, not this video he was talking about. I'm talking about a podcast episode.
Go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
I was going to say no also. Yeah, I don't think that he will.
I'll take the action. Okay. I'll take the action. I'll go with the yes. I'll go with the yes.
All right.
Yeah. What is this? Is this charity bet are we doing?
Well, let's do a straight up 1-to-1 charity bet. Does that sound good?
Okay.
Do you think, are those fair odds? Do you think it's a coin flip on yes or no? I think it's a coin flip. He might get inspired. You never know.
I think he's back before week one. Yeah, I'll take that action.
Okay, very good. $25 charity bets. It's been a while since we've done one of those.
It has been a while. Mark, you want in on this?
No, that's okay. I don't actually feel that strongly one way or the other. I don't think he will, but if he did, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
And by the way, so the video that he put together is really good.
Is it really?
I so much enjoyed it. Not only his part, but I don't know what I'm allowed to talk about. There was 80s sitcom nostalgia built into it that made me smile before I ever hit play.
So Vito has an undeniable ability for entertainment. And I hope that all of my shit talking about Vito is because I love his ability to entertain, and hearing that he is bringing some of that into it, hearing that he was working on a video, I got pretty excited. I just like giving him crap about his podcast. I'm not trying to be pessimistic by saying no. I'm just following my bit, staying consistent on my bit on making fun of Vito. Mark, I'm asking you this with genuine interest. I'm not fishing for anything. I'm genuine interest. I know you listen to a lot of podcasts. What are some of the auto listens on your list? Ones that you make a point to listen to day of release.
So if it's anybody within this community, I'll listen to their shows as soon as it comes out. So, I mean, that's actually quite a few podcasts, but it could be, you know, the 7 Out podcast. It could be Tipping the Odds. You know, it could be 500. It could be Vegas Confessions, Vital Vegas, Vice Lounge, 360 Vegas. I mean, really, anybody who's in the community, I listen to right away. And then there are some others that are kind of maybe Vegas related, but they haven't really embraced the community. I listen to those as well, but I'll save those.
Okay.
It helps that I have a commute that allows me to listen to all these. And sometimes I go up to the casino during my lunchtime. So the reason I'm able to listen to so many is because I'm in the car quite a bit and I listen to everything at double speed.
Since I have... my commute has gone from public transportation to my motorcycle as of a few months ago. And so I've had, unfortunately, had to be more selective. I eventually get around to everything, but the listening to on the day of release or the at least even the week of release has gotten much more selective. Of this group, yourselves notwithstanding, I mean, I don't think any of us would even... Who's the favorite to win this pool? So anybody who's not curious, if this is, or if anybody who's not hasn't been following this pool that Vinich has put together. There's a handful of us podcasts in here, like we got on some veto tangent, and then so it's I think we each make three picks against the spread. Has it been determined what spread we're going to use? That's one thing I need to know.
The website that you register at will have a static line.
Okay, very good. Well, that's good to know. And then you make three picks, and then there's confidence picks, right? So you can have most confident, middle, and then least confident, right? And so they're all weighted that way, which is kind of nice. I definitely like that. It's one thing I actually don't like about the Super Contest because, like, I mean, there's some weeks where I'm like, there's only two games that I like. I have to pick three more, seriously. Mm-hmm. So who do you think the favorite is here? Eric, I'm going to start with you since I think you're most familiar of all of the players involved. Who do you think is the favorites podcast-wise, knowing who's contributing to what picks, to win this pool?
And before you answer, Eric, let me just say, Dr. Mike will be making all of our picks.
and let me tell you that I will be making all of the Better Life picks.
All right. I think I'm going to go with Vinny.
Yeah,
that's a good pick.
I think if I was going to back a horse in the race other than myself, I'd go with Vinny.
So... I'm going to say, I agree. If there were actual odds on this, I probably would bet on do for a win because people who don't know what they're doing often do pretty well in these sort of things. Right. So, I may roll with do for a win, as a dark horse to win this. The podcast that I think is missing from this, and I don't know if anybody brought it up. I think Adam Bauer is missing from this. I think the fanboy who has his three picks each week needs to be in this. You know, if Scott Stratton ever started the Vegas 30, or I guess now the Vegas 40 podcast ever again, I'd be inclined to it.
Yeah, what happened to that? We even said something on our show. I thought he was going to bring that back.
You know, I thought so too, and I'm confident he listens to the show. So I'm sure he's like yelling at his radio, whatever his feelings are about that. But I see yelling at the radio like that's what he's doing. He's probably listening from his phone or something like that. But I don't know why I assumed he was listening from a radio. But weird segue into Scott Stratton giving keynotes at G2E, the gambling expo.
Global Gaming Expo, G2E.
Thank you. I almost called it the Gaming Global Expo, and then I was like, that's not right. Those are the right words, but I know that's not the right order of words. Eric, you and I will both be at that. Is it okay for me to say that now?
You can say that now.
Very good. We'll both be there.
Somehow, some way, they viewed us credible to give us media credentials. So we will be going as media.
That's true. Yeah. So we will be going as media. This is something I opened Eric's eyes to the glory of media credentials. It was funny when you and I were having the conversation, you're like, oh, I never thought about that. What are the chances? Then sure enough, there you go.
Media. And they did their research and approved it. Like you had to give them more information. They're like, yeah, all right, you count. You're right. I was like, son of a bitch. Are you kidding me? Hey, I can't imagine how many of these things I've paid for that they would just, you know, give you tickets to.
Yeah, media credentials are a beautiful thing. Mark, unfortunately, it sounds like you will only be there for the summit, but not for G2E.
Oh, man, I envy you guys. I would love to go, but yeah, I'm just not going to be able to take the time off for it.
The summit's your only Vegas trip through the end of 2019, right? I mean, I guess we're later in the year now, but that's all you got on the agenda?
Yeah, that's the only trip, Vegas or otherwise gambling-related, that we've got, yep.
Now, the summit is focused on downtown. Is that where you guys are staying, or are you guys going to be elsewhere?
No, you know, because we are both 7 stars through Caesars Rewards, we're going to stay at a Caesars property. And we decided we're probably going to stay at Caesars Palace only because we were thinking the logistics of it. It's kind of easy to get in and out of there to head downtown versus some of the other Caesars properties on this strip. So we'll be staying at Caesars.
I don't know if you remember from last week's The Better Life, the same person who emailed about marriage and gambling and wives and whatnot also asked about, I think it was 3 or 4 nights comped at Tropicana or the same amount of time for $225 at Caesars. I think Eric and I both leaned Tropicana, not knowing what the agenda was. What would your, between those two options, which way would you go?
Oh, yeah, I'd go with Tropicana, even though, you know, it's not, the location's not as good as Caesar's Palace, because it's a free room. Yeah, there's no way I'm going to pay that much for Caesar's Palace, at least personally. You know, room's not all that important to me. So, yeah, I'll take the comped room.
Patreon.com/TheBetterLife is where you can go to support the show. We have the book club there. We're going to give out Gambling Wizards by Richard Munchkin. Mark, have you read this book yet?
No, I have not. It's funny. I was talking about my commute and listening to all these podcasts and everything. I just don't have time to read.
Mark, I actually have, I have an extra copy of Chris Andrews' Then One Day. I don't know if you have any interest in that, but I'd be happy to send it your way.
Yeah, sure.
If you had interest in it.
Great.
Yeah, okay. Very good.
If it's something I'm interested in, if the topic of the book is something I'm interested in, then I can get through it quickly and really enjoy it. Sure.
Sure. Okay. Very good. Other than the summit, anything that the listeners can look forward to and possibly seeing you at a dice table?
Nothing other than the summit. Mike was thinking about an August trip. I'll just announce on your show here that fell through. So he is not even going before the summit, at least right now. So it's just the summit. Of course, it's every weekend at Harrah's Southern California. And we will be going to Gamblapalooza, which will probably be in April and might be somewhere down south.
Hopefully. It might be.
Might be. Oh, you know, Mark, so I don't know if you remember the episode, but you guys were talking about the Great Gift wrap-up.
Yes.
And you actually mentioned me on the show, and you said, you know, or Mike said, Eric must have a lot of points. I wonder if he's coming to the event.
Yeah.
The Great Gift wrap-up is for casinos west of the Mississippi.
Okay.
So Play on the East Coast does not earn points for the Great Gift wrap-up.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Well, I did not know that.
So they have their own version of it to a much lesser fanfare. But I did chuckle hearing getting mentioned in that conversation, and I figured, you know, well, this is the one time I have something for Mark that he doesn't know. So I'm gonna take advantage of that.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because Mike has said that when he goes to these events, the dealers tell him, oh, this is our busiest weekend of the year, you know, busier than New Year's, just, you know, because people come from all over for this gift, this great gift wrap-up. So, yeah, I did assume it was people from all over the country. So, yeah, I'm glad you told me.
Well, I mean, it could be people from all over the country.
Who go to Vegas, right, but not people who play, say, just in Atlantic City. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Right, right. So if I go to Vegas 4 times a year and Caesars Entertainment might not be the proper, or, you know, might not be where I'm giving most of my action, it doesn't wind up being worth enough to fly 3/4 across the country for. But if you're a Vegas regular, I mean, there are people that, I can only imagine how many points Mike gets at the end of the year. I mean, it's substantial. Like it's worth flying in
for. Oh yeah. And he, even this year, I think like in April, he had already earned the same number of points that he had the whole previous year. So he's definitely going again. But even, you know, for me, even now that I'm 7 stars, it's not worth the trip for me, you know, just a quick 1-hour flight. It's just not.
Oh, so here's my question. So you mentioned on a, I don't know if it's the last episode or a fairly recent episode, that in your spreadsheet you track tips.
Yeah.
Now, my mind was blown when we started tracking the tips that I was leaving. What was your...
I'm looking at it. I pulled up the spreadsheet. Right now, it's $1,277. And that's for one and $2 tips while I'm gambling.
Right. So I have learned, and I'm forcing myself not to tip as much. But when I had somebody track it, it was like $300 every session.
Yeah.
In that ballpark. And then I thought to myself, what about Mike?
Yeah.
Like that number, you got to add two zeros. I mean, that's got to be a tremendous, tremendous number.
That might be true. Two zeros. It's absolutely possible because he is making bets for them all the time. And it's these, you know, prop bets. I guess it depends on what you would count as a tip. Does only the initial bet parlays for him? Only the initial bet count, which I think should be the only amount, or does the parlay also count? But either way, oh my gosh, yeah, if I were to keep track.
Yeah, but when he parlays and it doesn't hit, he winds up dropping them chips anyway.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. You know what I'll do? So, maybe I'll try over a course of maybe 3 weeks, I'll keep track of what he's doing as far as tipping them, and then just, you know, extrapolate that and figure out what it would be for a whole year's worth to see if we're coming up with. But yeah, honestly, I make $1 and $2 tips. That's it. And it still was over. It's over $1,200 and we're only in August.
Eric, summit's coming up. Anywhere else that you can mention that you might be headed to before then?
I'm going to have to make a trip to Encore Boston Harbor, MGM Springfield, and Mohegan Sun. The offers are stupid. I've got to go back. When you add all three up, I mean, it's a very good reason to return.
Very good. Well, fellas, it was nice to talk with both of you. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, you bet. This was great.
Eric, always a pleasure talking to you.
The pleasure is mine, Tim. Remember that. The pleasure
that's right.
is mine.
It's always Eric's. Well, on behalf of Mark Duvall and Eric Rosenthal, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night. Good luck.